Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Our Monday morning Northwestern health briefing this week is with Dr. Tom Rand, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Doctor, good morning. I was reading about osteoporosis over the weekend, and this is a little scary. Half of women and up to 25% of men will break a bone in their lifetimes due to osteoporosis. Those are big numbers.
They are big numbers, Bob. About 50% of women over the age of 65 have osteoporosis, and about 25% of the men over 65. Part of it, when you look at it, is there's some controllable risk factors that can help individuals maintain bone density. Osteoporosis is really a progressive loss of bone, and as people get older, there's more decrease in overall physical activity or weight bearing, and that by itself can actually help a lot of increasing your bone density, so you have a less risk of having a fracture from a fall. Women have a higher incidence of having it because after menopause they have a decrease in estrogen, and with decrease in estrogen they have kind of decrease in bone density that occurs.
Are there any early symptoms of osteoporosis?
You know, the first symptoms that usually come about for individuals that know they have it is they have a fall from just standing height and they have a fracture. And it's a kind of a fragility fracture that normally when we stand and sometimes we fall, we usually don't break a bone. If you break a bone from a standing fall, there's really high likelihood that you have now diagnosed yourself with osteoporosis.
When should people be screened for this?
Usually over the age of 65, those individuals that have really other risk factors like a family history, smokers, heavy drinkers, there are some increased risks in those individuals with hyperthyroidism or diabetes. Some vitamin deficiencies can be there, and people with eating disorders can have increased risk. And the screen is really to take a scan to see what your density of bone is. And then there are medications that can help with it to help keep bone density there. But one of the best things we could do for ourselves is really limit smoking, decrease overall drinking, don't be a heavy drinker, and actually have weight-bearing exercise as we get older, because that's what puts bone down. Bone's alive. And it responds to stress, and that stress really is exercise and really weight-bearing exercise. As little as going for, you know, a 30-minute walk several times a week will help.
What about vitamins or supplements? Does that help?
There are medications that can help build bone. I mean, increasing our calcium, dark green, vegetables, seafoods, vitamin D is important. Really getting out in the sun for about 30 minutes a day to increase our vitamin D production. I think overall, when you look at this, it's really a balanced diet, a good exercise program, and limited smoking and drinking that can some factors that we could control. Mm-hmm. But the more active you are, the better balanced your diet is, the less likelihood that you would come down with having a condition of osteoporosis.
And what you said about vitamins reminds me of a question that I always have. When's the best time to take supplements? Is there one?
Well, I mean, vitamins in general or supplements, when you think about it, is there are some that are beneficial for those individuals that have deficiencies. People that have a very good diet usually don't have vitamin deficiencies. If you're going to take a vitamin, I think the best thing that you could think about in taking a vitamin is be consistent with a multivitamin. There are some studies that go back and forth of when's the best time to take it, of individual vitamin types. But overall, if you're eating healthy and you want to supplement your diet with a multivitamin, just taking it every day is beneficial for you. I don't think you have to get down to setting an alarm clock to get to the point of what time or of the day or when, before or after eating, should you take a vitamin.
Like everything else in my life, I overthink this. I'm always wondering, should I take this with food or without food, or if I'm taking more than one vitamin, and my wife gives me a handful, and I don't know what she's given me. Is it better to take some vitamins with other vitamins and, not pair others What do we know about this?
I think if you have an individual deficiency, it is speaking with your doctor and taking actually that vitamin to supplement because you're not getting it in your diet. The other way to think about really is just take a multivitamin. The multivitamins are balanced across. They have the recommended daily allowances of the concentrations that we need to take in. And it's a good additional kind of supplemental diet that you would actually take on a daily basis that would help balance you going forward. I wouldn't put too much thought into timing as you go through with it. Days are busy. People have enough things to worry about as opposed to kind of, you know, setting up a time frame of when they're going to take their vitamin.
That sounds good. I'll go with that. Continuing with Northwestern's Dr. Tom Moran. Big news last week, the Senate introducing legislation to legalize cannabis on the federal level. And this brings up an interesting question about smoking and also the now more popular edibles and gummies. What do we know about all this, Doctor?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, there's been a push overall to legalize marijuana that has been around. It's a plant-based drug that many people have used, and now there's a push to make it legalized for many reasons. But one of the things that we're ending up finding is with legalization of marijuana, we come forward with increase in potency of marijuana. So there has been, from a plant-based THC, the drug that's in the plant that we smoke, gives you about 10% of THC in the plant. Some of the manufactured edibles and other forms of marijuana that come forward could be up to a potency of 90%. And there are some studies that have been showing this high potency marijuana is increasing risks of cardiovascular disease, stroke, and mental health issues that are coming forward. And that's the rub that comes in here. There's the push. It's like, hey, it's just like alcohol. Why wouldn't we legalize it for the tax implications and everything else that goes forward with it? But we really don't know the effects that it's going to have on the adolescent brain and the younger adults that would be utilizing it, because now it's conceived as it's legal, it must be safe.
What you're saying about the potency of it would give one pause who thinks that it's much better, healthier for you to have a gummy or an edible than to smoke marijuana. Not necessarily true, is it?
No, not necessarily true, because, I mean, if you look at some of the studies that have been done with many people, like 435,000 individuals show an increased risk of cardiovascular disease and stroke, but also mental health needs. Those that use daily marijuana and these higher potency marijuana have a 5-time increase in mental health needs. And there is more studies that need to go on to kind of look at this before there's like this social push to make it legal. But I don't think there is enough really legitimate studies to show is it something that we really should do.
Right. More studies coming, I'm sure. Let's talk a little bit about colon cancer screening. Right now, most people over the age of 45 are recommended to get a colonoscopy once every 10 years. But it's changing, isn't it?
Yeah, there was a recent study in Sweden, about 110,000 individuals. The current screen starts at about 45, and if you have a negative screen, your next one is 10 years out. What they found in this study is those that had a negative screen with low risk, no risk factors, meaning no family history or other risk factors associated with colon cancer, they can extend this out to 15 years. It does a lot of things when you extend it out. The procedure itself and the number of procedures that go through are a lot. There's a risk of bleeding or perforation. Usually 3 out of every 10,000 procedures, someone can have a complication from it. The big takeaway from this study is talk to your doctor. Mm-hmm. If you have a negative screen at your first one, you have very low risk. You should look with your situation of can we extend this or not extend this. It's not right for everybody. I think there'll be more studies out to see if they can replicate this or not. But it's another way to look at, do we need to do as frequent as colonoscopies as we have been doing? Some err on the side of, yes, we do, because we do pick up cancers, even though you had a negative screen to begin with, or new polyps that form. And others are looking at the other side of it as global more. Are we really catching the ones that we need to do, and can we extend it safely to 15 years? And I think there's going to be more to come on this over time as more researchers do studies to see if it really plays out.
So is the bottom line for now, healthy individuals can wait longer for these screenings?
I think the bottom line is a conversation with your clinician and what is right for you as an individual. Can you get extended a little bit before you get your next colon cancer screening? It's really based on you. If you have any risk factors or any change in your bowel habits or anything that is going on, 15 years is way too long. And sometimes 10 years is too long. So it's more of a, there's a guideline, and then there's an individual tailoring of what we do for you as a patient.
Northwestern's Dr. Tom Moran, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. And now I have to go take my vitamins, doctor, but always good talking
Bob,
to you.
One thing I'd like to get out. It is Nurses Week this week, and I'd like to really thank all the nurses out there to contribute to the health of our patients each and every day. And I'd love to give a shout out to two in my family. My daughter Anna is coming up and graduating and being a nurse for the first time, and my niece Claire, who is out there. Thank you for being there and being an advocate for our patients and helping us deliver excellent care across the community. But everyone that's out there, thank a nurse this week.
Yeah.
Because without them, we cannot care for our patients.
So glad you got that in. And that's our lead story today. Can't thank the nurses enough. And thank you, doctor. We'll talk to you again next time.
Take care. Bye-bye.